Names are really important. They help us to identify and differentiate between people. When I was at school, we had a number of children in my class who had the same first names. We had three girls called Alison, not all spelt the same way, but that's a very limited help when you're yelling across the playground for someone called Alison. We had two boys called Neil, and we had a couple of Fionas in the year group as well. So the kind of games where you're to call someone's name and swap places were completely useless for my class. In some parts of Scotland, there have been historically so many people with the same or very similar names that they were all given nicknames so that we could work out who we were actually talking about in any given conversation. And equally, there are people who are officially called by one thing but are known by any number of different variations. And what you call them depends on who you are and in what context you know them. It gets quite confusing sometimes with names. There are a number of people in the Bible called John, particularly in the New Testament, and it's maybe a bit confusing as well. Which one is which? Are they different people? Are they all the same one? On the screen behind me, you should hopefully see the names of eight different Johns that are mentioned in the New Testament. Now, while it's possible that John the beloved disciple and John the son of Zebedee may be one and the same person, we can be quite certain that John the Baptist is not any of these other Johns that is named. Names matter, but they actually don't tell you the whole story of who someone is. The first half of today's passage looks mostly at John the Baptist. So who is he? And what do we know of him through the Gospels? Well, what we do know about him is that he was born to very elderly parents in a miracle birth. His mother is Elizabeth, Mary's cousin, that's Jesus' mum. And she's the one that Mary went to visit while she was expecting Jesus. John's father, Zechariah, was a priest. And you maybe remember the story in Luke's Gospel of him being silenced by the angel because he questioned how it could be possible for two such old people to become parents at such a great age. When he did become able to speak following John's birth, he offered up this song of praise to God. And some of the words speak of who his baby was going to grow up to be. "And you, my child," said Zechariah, "will be called a prophet of the Most High. For you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through forgiveness of their sins, because of the tender mercy of our God." All four of the Gospels suggest that John fulfills the prophecies in Isaiah. He's the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, "Prepare the way for the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God." Yet when we meet John in this reading, he's been locked up in prison. At this point in Matthew's Gospel, he hasn't shared the reason why John has been put into prison. John was no shrinking violet. He had a really powerful, uncompromising message. And he was willing to call out the wrongdoing that he saw around him, even the wrongdoing of people with quite a lot of power. In this case, he decided to call out the wrongdoing of Herod Antipas, and that is what got him into prison. The full details of just exactly what Herod had done come up in about three chapters' time, so I'll not go into it just now. We are told that although John was locked up in prison, he was still hearing all about what his cousin Jesus was doing. And so he sent his disciples with that slightly strange question, "Are you the one who is to come? Or should we expect someone else?" His question does raise quite a lot of questions in our minds, perhaps. And there are very differing views in the commentaries as to why John should ask such a question of Jesus in that moment. When you think about it, John was the one to baptize Jesus in the Jordan. He both saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on Jesus, and he heard the voice of heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." So John had already had confirmation of who Jesus was. So you've got this question about why would he doubt? Some of the commentaries suggest that John asked this question not for his own benefit, but for the benefit of his disciples, so that they would go and they would find out for themselves who Jesus was and the things that he was saying. And they would see it all firsthand. Now that seems a reasonable kind of answer to this conundrum, but surely John could have just directed his disciples to go and see anyway and go and listen to Jesus and watch him with the same result. A further suggestion is that John wanted Jesus to declare publicly exactly who he was. Again, I'm not fully taken with that argument. There's another option, though, which seems to me the most persuasive of the arguments for why this question is asked. And it's to do with this kind of message that John was declaring. John's message was a really fiery, imminent message of judgment on sinners. If you look at the words he spoke about Jesus prior to the baptism in chapter 3 of Matthew's Gospel, which should be up here in a moment for you, "He who is coming after me is mightier than I, whose sandals I am not worthy to carry. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. His winnowing fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly clean out his threshing floor and gather his wheat into the barn, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire." It is kind of hard to reconcile John's words with the picture of Jesus that we read in the rest of the Gospel. Jesus' ministry was one where he healed the sick and spent time with outcasts and declared that the age of salvation had arrived. We cannot deny the power in which he comes, but his was more a ministry of love than a coming with lots of force to make people follow him. So was it this mismatch between the reality of who Jesus is and what John expected about how the Messiah would really act that prompts the question? Are you the one to come, or should we expect someone else? I feel a mismatch seems like the most plausible explanation here. Jesus' response to John's question was quite straightforward. He told John's followers to go back, to report back what they have heard and see him do. All the things that are on that list that Matthew gives us in verse 5 are things which are mentioned in the prophecies in Isaiah. They're things that the Messiah would be doing. And they relate also to the miracles that we've read about in the preceding chapters of this gospel. Jesus is simply pointing John's followers back to the words that he's spoken and the deeds that he has performed to prove that he is the Messiah, the one foretold by prophecy. He may not be what John's expecting, but he is the Messiah. I have a question for you to ponder just for a few moments, and you can do this on your own or you can do it with the people next to you. Have you ever bought something, or perhaps started a new hobby, and it didn't work out quite the way you expected it to be? And what did you do about it? The question's on the screen for you there. I'll give you a couple of minutes just to have a wee think about that. I'm sure we've probably all had experiences where we've seen the advertising, we've bought something and it really didn't work the way we'd hoped it was going to work. It's quite a common experience, I think. We get taken in by things and they don't quite work out the way we expect. Sometimes, though, we don't expect something to be as good as it actually is. And that's what happens with Jesus. Perhaps we're not fully expecting. Let's see what Jesus tells John's disciples and speaks about next. Jesus tells John and his disciples, "Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." Now, in these words is a bit of a warning. And it's a warning not to give up on Jesus, even when he's not doing things the way you expect. I mean, those words are a warning for us too. We mustn't give up on Jesus because things are not working out the way we thought they might. Perhaps you're finding it harder to follow Jesus than you thought it was going to be. I mean, being a disciple requires some discipline. It needs us to keep going, even when the world around us is difficult. Even when our prayers don't get the answers that we think they should get, keep going. Keep going, keep seeking Jesus, the real Jesus, not the Jesus that you want him to be, Jesus may not match up to your first expectations of what you thought he would be like and how it would be to follow him. But if you keep going, keep seeking him with an open heart, hold fast to him, then God will bring blessing to you. When we move into the next section of the text, Jesus starts to explain the significance of John the Baptist. He starts asking the crowd who they thought they were going to find when they went out into the desert to speak to John. Were they expecting somebody that was weak and easily swayed like a reed in the wind? Were they looking for somebody that was dressed for court in beautiful clothing? If that's what they were looking for, it was not what they were getting. John was neither of these things. He was a man who lived in the desert. He ate what was in the desert. He was roughly dressed. And he wasn't somebody who was going to get involved in making the people in power feel better about themselves. John was there to deliver a message from God. And in that, he was bold and very forthright. John was a prophet. But Jesus suggests that he was not just any prophet. He was the one who was there to prepare the way for Jesus. And Jesus quotes the prophet Malachi, who lived 500 years previously, in saying, "I will send my messenger ahead of you. He will prepare the way before you." John is that messenger that Malachi spoke of. More than that, John's arrival was foretold in the books of the law as well as by the prophets. And it was John's role to herald the arrival of this new covenant through Jesus. He's the one that stands at the junction between the old and the new. Jesus tells the crowd that John is the most important person at that moment in time. And yet the one who is the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John. While John had an incredibly important role in signposting people to Jesus and the greater blessings that he brought into the world, changing the world forever, John was never to see that kingdom fully realized. So he didn't have a full part in it. The commentators suggest that when we come to verse 12, it's very complicated to understand. And perhaps the best way for us to understand it is to go back to chapter 10. And if you remember when we read there, we heard about all the violence and the opposition that was becoming part of the experience of Jesus' disciples and Jesus himself. While the kingdom ushered in blessing, in this time where the kingdom is still to be fully realized, there will be opposition to it and to those that follow Jesus. In the society around us today, have you experienced a welcome to the kingdom message and to Christian people, or have you come across resistance and opposition, albeit low level? Jesus declares John to be the expected Elijah, the one who would appear ahead of the Messiah. And that was something that the Jewish people had been awaiting for a long time. But Jesus simply says, "This is John. If you're willing to accept him, that's the truth. John is the Elijah that you were expecting." But the people didn't understand that the long-awaited Messiah was there. He was right in amongst them. And nor did they reckon John as the hoped-for Elijah figure. As Jesus calls out, "Whoever has ears, let them hear," he issues a call to the crowd to be open to the message he's bringing. And it's a call to us as well to sit up and take notice, not only of John, but of Jesus and what he's saying and what he's showing you. As Jesus continues to speak, he compares his contemporaries to children playing games in the marketplace. I have vivid memories of some of the really extended negotiations we used to have as kids about what game we were going to play and how we were going to play it, what were the rules going to be. We each seemed to come with our own idea of how the game should be, and sometimes getting an agreement as to what we were going to do, who was going to do what the rules were, could take us the whole of our school break, meaning that nobody actually played anything at all. And it's a scenario like that that Jesus is alluding to. So he's got a little proverb here, which seems perhaps a little strange to us. "We played the pipe for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn." In that proverb, Jesus is offering a wedding sort of a game, which the people had refused to take part in. And John came offering the opposite, a sort of funereal game. And again, the people said, no, thank you, don't want to know about it. The verses that follow that just extend that kind of comparison and explore the rejection of both John and Jesus by the Jewish people. Neither John's sparse lifestyle and his message of judgment, which could be almost seen as slightly funereal, was attractive to them, and nor was Jesus' more hopeful, positive message and his ability to be mixing with all sorts of people. There's a tragic truth here that people will find all sorts of reasons to not listen or not accept things that don't suit them and their way of thinking, things that don't fit into the framework that they've built for them. John and Jesus were offering the people very different ministries, but neither seemed to be acceptable to the folk. The people simply missed the point of who Jesus was as he walked among them. Yet Jesus points out that wisdom will be proved right by her deeds. All the wonderful things that he has done show the truth of his words. There's something quite challenging in this for us to ponder. How do we make sure that we're ready to accept and hear Jesus as he really is? We may ask ourselves, am I ready to actually listen to Jesus' message? Am I teachable by him? Do I really hear what's going on? If not, what's getting in my way? And how can I change that? The last section of the reading has Jesus announcing judgment that's going to fall on all the towns in which he had performed miracles. Despite having been first-hand witnesses to the power of Christ, to those miracles that he performed, the people in the towns refused to believe, which would just bring them to judgment. Towns are compared with pagan towns which had been condemned in Old Testament prophecy. Jesus is telling the crowd that these pagan towns would have repented if they'd seen what he was doing. Even his hometown stands judged because it too rejected him. He reminds the people that judgment will be all the more severe because they have seen the power of his miracles and yet refuse to believe. These verses are really uncomfortable reading for us. While Jesus' message is one of love, it is not devoid of judgment. We must make sure that we don't miss the point of who Jesus is. He paid the ultimate sacrifice for us, and his rising to new life has brought us immeasurable benefits. We have access to God in prayer. Jesus intercedes on our behalf with God. We have Jesus' presence with us through the power of the Holy Spirit. Do we appreciate truly how wonderful that is and how staggering the depth of his sacrifice is for us? But also, do we know the power of God's love for us, which saves us? Let us rejoice today and trust in the Lord. Amen.